Hi and welcome to Last Man Standing. You're here with me, Paul Stevenson, for the next hour here on Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org, and do support us. If you go to the homepage, you will find the various donate options there that are available to donate. And of course, it's imperative to support networks like this. We are totally committed to free speech, and we talk about everything, and that includes everything. So there's nothing here that we don't talk about, and so you get the full picture. We're not always going to get it 100% right, but I know I can speak for myself and my guest and the hosts that I know. We are always attempting at least to provide information as accurately as we can to our listeners. So do support us. We need that, and we need networks like this. All right. I hope you've all had a great weekend. And of course, welcome to the show. It is a late show. So if you don't catch it live, you can catch it in the archives. And I will also be live with Richard Kerry tomorrow on Republic Broadcasting Network at midday Central. That's on Beyond the Official Narrative. All right. A man who is embodies the spirit of truth and not holding back, as I described earlier, is my very special guest tonight. And that, of course, is the one and only Dr. David Duke. David, very welcome to the show. And I'm looking forward to talking to you because we haven't spoken for a little while.
Well, Paul, it's great to hear from you. And it's great to be on your show for a change. And it's I'm glad that you're on Republic Broadcast Network. I'm glad that you're doing this work. And I'm very appreciative of your effort for the truth. And maybe that's one way that I can begin an opening comment for you, that, you know, what is truth? Of course, that's the $64,000 question, as I used to say on these quiz shows years ago. What is truth? And truth, I guess, is many ways in the eye of the beholder, and different people have different ideas of what truth is. But how do we know what's true and what's not true? People can label a lie truth. They can label truth a lie. But I think the one way that we can determine that is by listening, by hearing both sides of any important question. And instead of taking the word for people of what's truth and a lie, let people have free speech so they can voice their opinions in their own words, in their own principles, and then they can certainly, if they truly believe in the idea of free speech or that their position is true, they shouldn't fear debate. They should not fear any sort of discussion, because debate is the best way for a person to come up with the truth. And the last thing I'll say about that, and I think it's very important that we do talk about truth, because I do believe there is something in the universe called a true, essential thing, or certainly a common truth by all standards of logic and knowledge and data. But I think it's impossible for us to truly judge what someone says by listening to someone who says someone says something. In other words, what I could say anything I want to about you, I can make up any lie. I can say that you recommend, you know, pedophilia or something if I want to, and put it out there. The only way you can know whether or not that person really does that, especially a person that refutes that position or doesn't agree with that position, is by hearing them for yourself. What does that person say truthfully about pedophilia? What does he say about white supremacy? What does he say about racism? What does he say about Jews? Is he an anti-Semite, or is anti-Semite a word used to defame people who Jews don't like? Maybe it's not a person who doesn't like Jews. Maybe it's a person that powerful force, say the leaders of Israel and the policy makers of the powerful Jewish groups that have a Jewish agenda and Jewish influence in politics and media and government and banking, maybe they're simply defaming someone. So to know what someone really thinks about any subject of importance, vital subjects that can mean the existence of a whole people or the destruction of a people or war that could affect millions of lives, the suffering of millions, the freedom of millions, the well-being of this earth. I think it's very vital that we have something called freedom of speech. And I'm an advocate of freedom of speech. But the critics of Paul Stevenson and the critics of David Duke, they don't believe that certain ranges of speech are permissible of how, and they have to define that. They define words like racism. They define words like anti-Semitism. They define words like racial supremacism. And to know whether someone is really an anti-Semite or really a racist or a supremacist, you have to listen to the person. What's he saying? What's he actually advocating to that audience? What's he advocating? What's the things he's advocated before? If somebody does a radio show, as I've done for the last 10, 12 years, and you've been doing for a long time now yourself, and you want to know their opinions, you don't have to read what someone says about Paul Stevenson. You can simply go and listen to his broadcast and listen to his own words, what he advocates. And what someone will find when they go to my programs and my speeches, what I'm saying to my friends, my associates, my enemies, and the public at large, what do I advocate? Do I advocate white supremacy? No. Do I condemn white supremacy? If you define that as somebody who's trying to hurt other people or repress other people or exploit other people or enslave other people or kill other people, then obviously I am not a white supremacist. And that's how that's defined today. And if you define a racist as someone who hates other people and wants to hurt other people and suppress other people and not have equal opportunity for other races and decent treatment of other people and just treatment for other people, then I know I'm not a racist. But there's no way you can determine that unless you get to hear those people for yourself. So that's the first element, I think, of free speech, which I think makes sense and makes logic sense. And yet we have a very powerful media which is determined to censor people like yourself, Paul, and like me, because we dare to question the narrative. We say that racism is going on against Europeans in both Great Britain, the EU, Canada, America, and the world, and there's intentional programs to destroy white people and destroy the elements of white people, the demography, to change the demography of the country, and to make white people a small minority, a minority that has a political subservience to a majority of people who are literally being weaponized and promoted in propaganda in the major media, newspapers, television, radio, movies, to hate white people. So I say that the narrative is opposite, and I think there's huge amounts of evidence that we can prove that this narrative is opposite, just as when they have so-called affirmative discrimination in Great Britain, which discriminates against better qualified white people in the name of being fair to people on the basis of their individuality and their individual talents or merits. They say, oh, this is evil, and it's wrong to discriminate against a better qualified black person for a job or scholarship or something he deserves by his ability, his hard work, and his merit, and it's wrong to do that. Well, I agree with that, too. I think the best qualified black person, and I got a record of political activity, being a member of the House of Representatives in Louisiana, and passing legislation, in my body at least, to prohibit discrimination based on race, to always select the best qualified person, whether they're white, black, or whatever. But affirmative action is not about supporting or putting the best qualified person by race, but it's by favoring certain races, whatever excuses you want. Even though they don't discriminate when they do this on the basis of, say, the opportunities a person has. Because a black person, and some black people have rich parents, some black people have educated people in their background. They have those advantages in life. They have a good income. Whereas many white people don't. Should that white person who's poor from a background that's a broken family or a sickness or disease or being wounded in a war or suffering terrible disabilities, but they show hard work and they do the best on qualifications for a job and by study and applying themselves, should they face discrimination? Because, in fact, they're white. I don't think there's any system that would justify that. But the reason that we have these kinds of programs and nobody calls it a human rights violation is because the people who control the narrative and who control the speech don't let people understand the realities are that I've been a person my whole adult life politically in America that has advocated and talked about equal rights for all, but special privilege to none. And they don't like that phrase because the people really of privilege are another tiny minority that we talk about here and we must discuss, but a tiny privileged, a chosen minority that has enormous influence in government and media and campaign monies in the United States. And we can just go on in the major media of the world. And it is busy censoring people that discuss the racism of Israel and the racism that exists in that ethnic racial community that's called Jews, and which is something that we can't even to name. If you name it, then you're going to be called an anti-Semite. But all day long, you can criticize white people as racist or white people as anti-Semitic. A white person that simply defends their representation or defends their rights against a tiny Jewish minority that has differential power and money and influence and banking and all finance and all of those things, he's called an anti-Semite when they lead us into wars that cause the death and destruction, sometimes not just even thousands of people, but millions of people and trillions of dollars of expense of a country, as America was led into war in Afghanistan and in Iraq by so-called Jewish neocons and neocommies, frankly, who led us into this war because it was really a war for Israel, not for the United States and certainly not for Great Britain. I'm sorry to be so long there, but I've never given that train of thought first to begin a show, and I thought maybe that'd be a good place for us to start.
Sure thing. And, feel free. And, you've led us on there to the war and the idea of this. You talked about Afghanistan, but and thousands of deaths, and nowhere more so is this true and epitomized in the current tragedy that is the Ukraine. We would affirm that the vast majority of the motivation behind this war is Jewish interests, or as they see it, their interests. I don't think it's working out too well for them. And we talked about truth. Well, I would say at the end of the day, all truth is reality. It's an objective phenomena. And, I find it very interesting. I was listening to some ex-general or ex-intelligent gentleman on a Polish network last night talking about how the Russians have refused every opportunity for diplomacy. And only now are they perhaps open to the idea of diplomacy as they're failing on the battlefield. And I wondered, does this guy really believe this? I think he does. This guy has been totally propagandized, because the propaganda and the lies about this war are basically the complete opposite, as I understand what's happening on the ground there. Really, it's Zelensky and a puppet of the U.S., and U.S., which is a puppet of Jewish power, of course, have refused every attempt by Russia for diplomacy, and only now, as Kiev is in darkness and are struggling to find clean water, and the Ukraine is on the verge of total annihilation, are they open to negotiations? But it's too late. There's nothing to negotiate. The time was back in February before Russia, went in there. They've taken the Donbass region. They've taken the other regions down near in the south. So it's too late now, I think if they do try and negotiate peace now, Putin should not be so naive and should learn his lesson, because they're not to be trusted, and they will be trying to buy time so they can regroup and attempt some sort of defense as to what's coming. But it's staggering to me that someone would make that kind of statement, because there's no evidence for it. All the evidence is that Russia made every attempt. Take, for example, the Minsk agreements. Angela Merkel has come out recently and said, unequivocally, and this was also echoed by Poroshenko, that they never intended to honor the Minsk agreements, that they were only buying time to prepare the Ukrainian military for an assault on Russia. and for to buy time to be trained since 2014. And that's exactly what they've done. And I hope Vladimir Putin, I'm sure he is aware of that, and he doesn't listen to any more attempts for, empty attempts for negotiations. Like I said, there's nothing to negotiate anymore. The Ukrainians have got no cards to play. They played their cards, and it hasn't worked out for them. Also, you have Europe. This is not reported, I'm sure, in American media. It's not reported in UK media either. You have to look a little bit for it. But there's huge tensions in Europe now. I mean, you had 19 MEPs, members of European Parliament, reject the resolution calling Russia a state sponsor of terrorism. You had Thierry Mariani, a French diplomat, who said, this has to stop. He said, this unconditional, unrestrained hatred of Russia needs to stop. And because it's destroying Russia, so you are destroying Europe. And now you have tensions between Europe, Germany, Olaf Scholz, even Macron. At least they're probably to some extent dog whistling to their, the unrest in their country. But you had a diplomat come out this week and he said the Inflation Reduction Act has changed everything. Is Washington still our ally or not? So you're seeing these fractures. It's that breaking point. I don't think the EU is going to survive this, and I don't think NATO is going to survive this. And you're seeing this tension and this, increased animosity between Europe and the United States, which is unprecedented since World War II. Your comments on that?
Okay, and I would preface my comments because people can say, okay, who's this talking head, David Duke? But I've got a history of spending time in Eastern Europe. I worked with Alexander Solzhenitsyn in what was the Soviet Union, which became Russia, an anti-communist individual, and I've learned a lot from that. I actually went to graduate school to get my doctorate in Ukraine, in Kyiv, Ukraine. I mean, what more can I do? I lived there for a couple of years. I work with people. I did research there. I gave a whole number of talks and lectures about subjects, and I met most of the historians of that country. So, I mean, I can offer some information, and I can tell people very, very clearly that Ukraine today, and the reason we're having this war, is because the United States of America, the world's only superpower, is a country that is controlled by this tiny minority that has such disproportionate and almost dictatorial power over the country. And it's not just government. It goes way beyond that. It's not only government officials, it's also the global media, which is presenting these lies that you talked about. So I want to start maybe in discussing this a little bit with you, if you want to get my take on it, and I'll share this with the audience, is you said something clearly when you said earlier that how the United States was under the control of this Jewish minority, that our government policy was such under the control, a lot of our political influence is under their control, even our financialists, but you said basically it's Jewish control. Now, that may seem strange because most people have never even heard this, and yet it's like an incredible, enormous mammoth. In fact, mammoth means an enormous elephant, which was an ancient elephant. It was even bigger than the African elephant. And there's this huge Jewish elephant mammoth in the room that has so much power in America, and we can show that its influence over wars. I'm not going to go all the way back to First World War, which I could, which is also helping to weaken the czarist Russia, the Christian Russia, for a communist revolution, which was, by the way, also a Jewish-led revolution. I could talk about the origins of the Second World War, where in 1933, when Hitler came to power with no military aggression against anybody, world Jewry declared war on Hitler, and they said they were going to try to bring the rest of the world in war against Hitler. And a war was started really over a border dispute in Poland, which ultimately killed tens of millions of people, 75 million people in this war. We caused so much human misery and so much death in a war that was not really going to kill but a tiny fraction of that number. and a war on the side of the Soviets, which had already killed 20 to 30 million people under Jewish Bolshevik leaders. Now, when I say these things, I'm not making them up, and I can go right to the Iraq War. I'll take a second and quote from Haaretz newspaper. It's the oldest daily in Israel. This is from April 3rd, 2003. I citate all my things. And Jewish newspapers in Israel have been very honest about Jewish domination of the American government, Jewish domination of the American political funding, Jewish domination of all of these things, and the Jewish role in the so-called Iraq War. So before the Iraq War, I did a lot of traveling around the world saying there were no weapons of mass destruction. It was kind of obvious from the beginning. Now, Haaretz, on April 3rd, right before the beginning of the war, 2003, and this is an article, they did an article called White Man's Burden. And White Man's Burden, the article title itself, is so powerfully indicting of, you know, there's total disrespect for white people in America, and they feel like they can exacerbate, they can brag over their power over us. What White Man's Burden is referring to in this article, and you'll see in a moment what I'm talking about, was the fact that Jews, according to this newspaper article, largest daily of Israel, and they point out the facts of who these Jews were, and they point out the fact that they were almost all Jewish, ultimately, in the article, that they got white people in America to fight this war, to create this war. And by the way, it was a war for lies. It was a war conceived by these Jewish, quote, intellectuals who were in government, in the Pentagon, in American intelligence, and how they gave us this war based on lies. And this is what it says. This is the first thing they write in the article. The war in Iraq was conceived by 25 neoconservative intellectuals, most of them Jewish, who were pushing President Bush to change the course of history. Two of them, Generals William Kristol and Charles Krauthammer, say it's possible. Then, just three paragraphs down, folks, listen to this now. The same Jewish newspaper in the same article admits that it wasn't simply, you know, most of them Jewish who were these neoconservatives. They admit that almost all of them were Jewish. And here's that quote from the article. In the course of the past year, a new belief has emerged in the town, the belief in war against Iraq. That ardent faith was disseminated by a small group of 25 or 30 neoconservatives, almost all of them Jewish. Almost all of them intellectuals. A partial list, Richard Perle, Paul Wolfowitz, Douglas Feith, William Kristol, Elliot Abrams, Charles Krauthammer. People who are mutual friends and cultivate one another and are convinced that political ideas are a major driving force of history. Well, these were not simply Jews. These were Jews who were members of Jewish think tanks and Jewish organizations that are dedicated almost wholly, truly, to the Israeli state and to Zionism. A Jewish ethno-state in Israel, based on race, based on your heritage, that ethnically cleansed hundreds of thousands of Palestinians from their own land, drove them out with torture and terror and prison and bombings and killings and all the rest of it. This is the reality. And these people that I just talked about, like Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz, they worked right in the Pentagon. They were in the presidential offices and in the vice president's office, Douglas Feith and William Kristol, Abrams. These were Jews, and they were dedicated to Jewish interests. And they saw Saddam Hussein was a big enemy of Israel, even though Saddam was actually an ally of America. But we went to war against him because he dared to support the ideas of the Palestinians and supported them militarily while these Jews were getting America to support with our tax money the military of Israel, which was continuing to expand and also, even at this time, controlling the West Bank and just forcing these Palestinians to live like an open-air prison. So this is all fact. Now, so a couple things about the article, though, weren't said, which could have been said, should have been said, was that, first of all, it's not just neoconservatives. The neoliberals, the neoliberal Jews in the government at that time, senators and congressmen, to a person, voted for this war. It wasn't just the conservatives. And the media, which is considered very, very liberal, not even neoconservative, except they were happy to have on neoconservatives, even though they're not liberal in some other positions. They were happy to have them on talk about how we have to have this war. And all those NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, completely Jewish controlled. I mean, completely Jewish controlled. The New York Times, since 1895, it's been controlled of only a tiny number of Jews, 4, 5, or 6, or 7, depending on the year, members of the so-called Class B stockholders, which control 90% of the company and are responsible for every hiring or firing or every rule or who's, whatever they do. These are Jews, and these don't just happen to be Jews. They support Jewish advocacy organizations, and they're all dedicated Zionists. We had the same thing going on with the Washington Post at the time and other Jewish-controlled publications, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, of course. I mean, this is the realities. And, of course, you had the major funding operations like Goldman Sachs. They were all supporting the war, just like they're supporting the, you know, this war in Ukraine. Now, the war was put in, absolutely. And let's talk about the Ukraine war for a second. I talked about the Jewish element in the Iraq war. It's the same what they call usual suspects, famous movie, same usual suspects. I mean, in 2014, we had an overthrow of the Ukrainian government by a foreign power, the United States. But it was really the power that rules the United States, and that's Jewish power, because this wasn't in the American interest to overthrow the government of Ukraine. It wasn't in the American interest to expand NATO to the West. The Russians let all of Eastern Europe go. They let these countries go free with the agreement that they'd be, you know, the neutral. That's all. That there wouldn't be any weapons. They didn't want any weapons in their border, just like America wouldn't want any weapons in their border. In 2014, Jews like Victoria Nuland and our Secretary of State, John Kerry, and by the way, he was from Irish Massachusetts, but his real name, actually, his real heritage was not Irish. It was Jewish. His name was Kahn. Changed the name to Kerry. Good name to have in Massachusetts, but he's Jewish. And he was the Secretary of State, just like Blinken is Jewish, the Secretary of State today. Nuland was part of that administration under him, which started the Maidan revolution and takeover coup. It was actually a coup. And they installed Jewish heads of the country. And then they began a war against the eastern part of the country and against the Russian-speaking population, which is almost half the population. And by the way, the Ukrainians are all fundamentally Russian, whether they're east or west. Even the Ukrainian language is simply a dialect of Russian. And it was all part of what they call the Kievan, out of Kiev, Kievan Rus. And Ukrainians honor Cossacks in Ukraine the same way that Russians honor Cossacks in Russia. It's kind of interesting. But the Jewish control of the country even ultimately led, just a couple of years ago, to a Jewish prime minister, a Jewish president, a Jewish defense chief, Jews head of all the media, and Jews dominating the oligarchs of oil and media. And they created this false character by name of Zelensky as a man of the people, even though he was a rich oligarch giving money by these other billionaires. And who are also
a total puppet who is now reading off, teleprompters. If you watch him reading, now, he's totally reading off teleprompters. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you.
He's just like he's acting in a fame movie, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, this is the way it is. So this is a Jewish war, just like the Iraq war. It is a Jewish war, and it's for Jewish interests. And the truth is, and this is the sad truth, that this war is not a war for any true interest of Ukraine. This is a war against Ukraine, even more so in many ways, against the people of Ukraine, as it is against the people of Russia and the government of Russia. Because Ukraine is being sacrificed on this Jewish altar of Jewish hegemony, because the Jews who run America, the Blinkens, and by the way, the good example, when you talked about the Jewish control of America, let me give you the facts, folks. You can look all this up. Now, you're not going to read these facts in the major media. They'll tell you that the Biden cabinet was the most diverse cabinet in American history. But the seven most powerful cabinet members of the United States, including the four which were originally outlined in the Constitution, the original Constitution of the United States, of the seven most powerful cabinet positions, and I can go through them really quickly, of the seven, six were Jews. And most importantly is Mr. Klein. As we all know probably around the world by now, if you're not brain dead yourself, you know that Biden is demented, and Biden doesn't even know where he is half the time. So Biden's completely controlled by his Jewish handlers, the same way, by the way, that Yeltsin was controlled by their Jewish handlers. And while Jewish oligarchs were led into Russia, and the Jewish oligarchs were allowed to steal the whole country out of the hands of the Russian people, literally steal the whole country. And the reason why Jews hate Russia today is for the same reason they hated the Tsar, the anti-communists who fought against the Bolshevik Revolution, and the same way they hate Putin, because Putin overthrew the Russian, quote, oligarchs, who weren't Russian at all, but were Jewish oligarchs. 12 out of the 13 were all Jews. And that's why they hate Putin, and that's why they hate Russia, because it's not part of this Jewish agenda. So then you have
The rise of the Orthodox Church is a big one, because you even had, I forget who his name was, but Tucker Carlson talked about it, and mm-hmm. I think he was a Jew as well, talked about how intolerant it was to have the rise of the Orthodox Church in Russia. You know, basically, a Jewish jihad against the rise of the Orthodox Church. It's something that doesn't get talked a lot about, but I think they very much fear that. You know, they know their history, and, you know, Putin is too much in the model of the Tsar, you know, for their liking, you know.
Well, a lot of this is because, as you know, Paul, is because we live in a Jewish milieu. I mean, we live in a Jewish-controlled media, a Jewish-controlled culture, a Jewish-controlled government, and they've rose to control many organizations, including some so-called Christian organizations. Now, the fact is that you can go into any library, you can go in any bookstore in America or the EU, or Great Britain, where you live, or anywhere in the world. And you can read a lot of books telling us that Christianity is really an evil force, and that Christianity is anti-Semitic, and that Christians persecuted Jews and hate Jews and are responsible for the Holocaust. This kind of thing, right? You can read all kinds of books that say that the crucifixion of Christ was all faked, or Christ is not a real person, or that, you know, Christ was a whatever, he was a sexual deviant or something like that. You can find anything, and you can find ridicule of that throughout the media. They don't really like Christianity. And Putin was a strong Russian Orthodox and a strong Russian Christian.
Put it mildly.
And under the Jewish power of the Soviet Union, they killed millions of Christians. And so they don't even want you to know that the New Testament, which is basically the New Testament, is simply another way of saying the New Covenant, that the whole principle of the New Testament and Testament and Christianity itself was a new covenant of God to the people who now became the chosen of God, and that's the people that accepted Jesus Christ, that it didn't matter what your ancestry was, it didn't matter your race, it didn't matter your other belief system. If you accepted Jesus Christ, if you did that, then you are now accepted and you were a child of God.
Exactly,
and,
right.
And they don't tell you, but the New Testament is full about the persecutions of Christ, because Jews, the Jewish religion, even though it's constantly presented as this religion of love and kindness, and how Jews are just Jews that, you know, that don't necessarily believe in Christ, but they're not against Christ, but they're just like, they're believers in God, but not Christ, the Father, but not the Son. And yet the truth is that Judaism itself and the Talmud is the most extreme, vilely anti-Christian, anti-Christ doctrine the world's ever seen. In fact, the Muslims are very praising of Jesus Christ.
A book which is unprecedented in its hatred for Christ.
Oh, my God. And there's a good book called Jesus in the Talmud that was by a professor at Princeton University, Peter Schaefer, who was considered, he was head of the Judaic Studies Department of one of the leading Ivy Leagues, one of the top universities in America. And with other Jewish authorities and writers, historical writers, showed that the Talmud is actually a book that hates Jesus Christ so much that the Talmud alleges that Jewish magicians. That's the only way you can put it, because Jews are full of black magic. That's and all sorts of
sorcerer, they
Kabbalistic
described.
stuff, sorcerer stuff. I mean, you know, which doesn't, you know, which is kind of not monotheistic in a real way. You know, these different gods and stuff, but who actually say that Jews conjured up this teacher of love and kindness and universal salvation and turn the other cheek and all these kinds of things, and love, kindness, and forgiveness, that basically says, and not basically, it just literally says that they conjured up Jesus back from the dead, because he wasn't didn't go to heaven. He conjured them up, and then he's torturing Jesus Christ. These Jews are torturing Jesus Christ for eternity in hell,
In human excrement.
in burning. That's right, human excrement. Imagine being, I can't even be imagine burning in oil, or much less excrement. Or you couldn't even think of something more hateful for a second rather than for eternity. This is the kind of love that Judaism represents, and the kind of anti-Christ value they represent. But you can't talk about that. And I'm not saying that every Jew believes this, but I'm just telling you, just go to your libraries and start looking up books that are really strongly anti-Christian, that are very much doubting of Jesus' divinity or his virgin birth or other things that insult Jesus. Maybe the Talmud says that Mary, you know, not only was she not a virgin, she was a whore. That's what they say openly. In fact, the Quran, the Muslim Quran, even talks about this and Jews, and it talks about the fact that the Jewish scripture says that Jesus Christ, you know, was a bastard. I hate to use those words, but that's technically the correct dictionary term, and that Mary was a whore. And I mean, and by the way, one of the reasons they hate Jesus is because they say that Jesus was actually of Gentile blood, Samaritan, not Jewish. But this is all true, but it's things that you're not allowed to know about. And yet, you know how many times you turn on a comedy show and you see Christians being ridiculed. They had a famous article in Eretz again, one of the leading papers of Israel, which talked about Larry David and Sarah Silverstone, who are, believe it or not, undermining America's family-friendly culture by glorifying obscenity. Now, this is a headline in a Jewish paper, which told the truth, by the way, about the white man's burden in Iraq, but literally said this, that Larry David and Sarah Silverman, these Jews, they're glorifying obscenity and undermining, you know, Christian family values by glorifying obscenity. Can you imagine that they're praising the fact they're underlying Christian morality? This is the leading and the oldest daily in Israel. And this is not criticizing them for this. This is praising them for this. There you go. I mean, you can't make these things up, but it just shows you some of the truth that, and I know this may be the first time that a lot of people listening to your show has ever heard this or heard of this data. You got to start absorbing it, folks, and thinking about it and weighing it. Now, if you'd like to, we could go into the other recent events in the Ukraine war and talk about how the Jewish media and the Jewish government establishment of the EU and America and media presents this war and some of the lies, which are obvious lies that they've peddled to us, that would certainly equal any of the most ridiculous lies that Orwell reveals in that great British novel, 1984, talking about the tyranny of Big Brother, and how that they lied about the war with the Oceania War, which was with Great Britain and in America, against the both East Asia, which would be like Russia, and excuse me, East Asia, China, and then Russia, which is called Eurasia. And they're doing the same thing today that Orwell was, I guess, trying to expose a little bit in those wars, and how they use wars to increase their power and lessen our own volatility as people. This is why they don't want me to speak, and they don't want my YouTube channel to be on, which used to have, it had maybe 2 billion views all total. My videos were copied by 160,000 different channels, but you can't find my videos now because they use AI in a massive level. where they could find things where people couldn't really go through all that very much. You'd have to have an army. But through AI, they can sort of anybody that tells uncomfortable truths for them that Jews don't want people to hear and just challenges some of the narrative. So we can talk about the Ukraine war for a little bit if you like.
Yeah, the lies are relentless and huge. I mean, the lies are to the extent of the complete opposite. So you have Zelensky, who's a complete crook. He's a complete puppet of the
and
West.
A dictator.
And a dictator.
Who's outlawed all the other parties.
Yes,
and they also have a total one-party control, government-controlled media, which bans any speech that points out that this government is leading the country to total death and destruction.
Yes, and then you have, on the opposite side, you have Putin, who's accused of being Satan himself. I think the evidence is that he's been largely honest with everything he's done in attempts for peace. He tried to minimize casualties and damage the infrastructure. It didn't do him any good. And also you have Russians accused of war crimes. All the while you have Kiev, Ukrainian state media feel comfortable enough with the barrier to the truth to the West to show the murder of 11 captured Russian soldiers. Now, this is starting to get out, for example, that type of thing. But this is what they accuse Russia of. And that video has been, I don't know well how it got out, but it got out. Well, I suppose someone pulled it off Ukrainian media and it's found its way to the West. You also have this level of kind of gaslighting, I guess, this crude level of audacious propaganda, where the suggestion is that the Zaporizhia nuclear plant, which is occupied, and no one disputes it's occupied by the Russians, that when
so
it comes
Russians
under
are in the
shelling,
plant, they're around
yeah,
the
they're
plant,
shelling it,
they're
yeah,
totally inside the plant, right?
So they're shelling the nuclear plant that they're occupying. So they're essentially shelling themselves. So you got to hand it to those Russians. I mean, if you're suicidal, I suppose you may as well do it the big time way. You may as well, destroy yourself in a nuclear fashion, you know?
Well, if you'd like to, let's go down some of the things you mentioned one by one. And I'm just going to appeal to those people who have logic and who know something about these issues, but at least can see the illogical nature of these lies. And these lies are certainly equivalent to the newspeak of that George Orwell talked about with Big Brother's Ministry of Truth, which we have, by the way, in this country. So let's talk about some of the atrocities and the war crimes, right? So they've been putting out this entire war crime narrative where the Russians are committing these massive war crimes. And yet, here's the example why this is the most ridiculous and the most easily proven lie that you can ever talk about because of the fact of the reality that we can prove happened. And if we can prove this happened and we can prove about the fact this has been in some media, well, prove to you that the people who are lying are not the Russians. It's the people who are supporting Ukraine and covering up the evil of the Jewish dictators of Ukraine. So here's a Daily Mail, one of your leading papers, of course, obviously in Great Britain. And it shows the fact, and anybody can go and search it enough. You have to find it. You can find it in very many YouTube channels, but you can actually find it. You can watch the literally taped live national television, state-owned television, and controlled in Ukraine, where they featured a Ukrainian doctor who controls Ukrainian medical units, right, and hospitals and this type of thing. And this Ukrainian doctor came on national television telling the TV interviewer that he's ordered his staff, the doctors under him, many of them, and telling the whole nation, by the way, the right thing to do to Russians who are captured. We're talking about Russian soldiers, some of them teenagers, young people, 19, 20, 21 years old, 22, 23, 24 years old, and telling his staff, Ukrainian doctor tells TV interviewer, this is headlines, he has ordered his staff to castrate. Yes, I'm using that word, castrate, to cut off the testicles, cut off the penis in many cases, of soldiers, Russian soldiers. And these are wounded Russian soldiers. That's why they're in the hospitals. These are people who faced wounds in war. This is a war crime of monumental level because they are, quote, cockroaches. Subtitle, Gennady Rizenko, who's also married to another famous Jew, told Ukraine 24 he gave order to castrate Russian POWs. The owner of a war zone mobile hospital told broadcast that they are cockroaches. They're not even human beings, but of course they are human beings. They're just kids, most of them. You can't think of anything more insane and more evil than to do that kind of thing. The Russian Investigative Committee opened a criminal case into the comments. The Russians did. Well, we know this is a fact. And by the way, if you remember the war in between the Tutsi and the Hutu, we actually prosecuted radio people who got up and said, you know, that the enemy needs to be killed, or like the Tutsis or the Hutsi needs to be killed, and advocated that they should be killed or something. But this is, we know this happened. We have the videos. We know it was on Ukrainian national television. But I would, unless you've been listening to your program, unless you've been listening to the Paul Stevenson program or David Duke's program, you're not going to know a word about this. So I would ask you why, if you haven't heard about this, and we can again prove it exists and we prove the media had access to it, why haven't you seen this on your TV news? Why haven't you heard about that, read about that in the front pages of your newspapers? And if you question that, I ask you, okay, I just give you a good contrast. Imagine if on Russian television, and you know we monitor everything they say, Russian national television, a Russian doctor, the head of medical clinics, dealing with, you know, of people injured in the war, POWs and injured, and others, if they told the TV interviewer that he ordered his staff to castrate Ukrainian soldiers because they're cockroaches. They would be prosecuting this person in the human rights court for human rights, just like they did the people from...
You'd never hear the end of it.
Oh, you never hear the end of it, right?
You never hear the end of it anyway, just based on their false claims about Russia's war crimes. In fact, Amnesty International, of course, came out earlier in the year, a kind of an anti-establishment organization, but someone in there felt morally moved to highlight and expose up to 100 Ukrainian war crimes. And of course, there was a lot of pressure brought to bear on the organization, and they somewhat backtracked. But yeah, you would never hear the end of it. And it's constantly pointing the finger at Russia for war crimes.
It's meanwhile, constant propaganda. It's just constant.
It's very, very intense propaganda.
And it's evil. You know, it's like, it's just like the lie that everybody's heard by now after this, since this war started way back in February, March. I mean, it's like, we've heard it. Everybody who watches the news at all, or even watches any sort of television, you're going to hear it here and there, or watches evening talk shows or late night talk shows, or reads newspapers or reads magazines, is going to have read 1,000 times how Russia started an unprovoked war, that Russia started the war. And the truth is that the Ukrainian legal elected government of Ukraine was overthrown by a coup engineered by the United States, which again, when you talk about the United States, you're talking about Jewish power structure. Like I mentioned, again, the cabinet of the United States. By the way, I didn't even name those. I meant to get there. But again, the guy who is the chief of staff under Biden, by the way, a very good, fantastic researcher who's from Slovenia. She's done a great job in documenting all this stuff, how the cabinet of Biden, the most important influential cabinet members, are in fact Jews. And she's to be commended. But nobody else knows this. Instead, we get national stories in our Jewish New York Times and our Jewish Washington Post and our Jewish ABC, NBC, CBS and our Jewish CNN and all this other stuff. We get these massive headlines talking about how that Biden has the most diverse cabinet in the history of the world, you know, in the history of America, actually, probably in the world, too. And yet look at the cabinet of this country. Of the seven most important members, six of them are Jews. I can go through them real quickly. Our Secretary of State, Blinken, Jewish. The Chief of Staff, who basically helped select all the other members, the most important members, is Ron Klain, who is another one of these Jewish promoters. He was a neoliberal, by the way, not a neoconservative, but a neoliberal Jew who supported the lies of the Iraq War. And he appointed these Jews. So you have, you know, Blinken, head of the Secretary of State. You've got, who else do you got? Well, you got Janet Yellen, head of the Treasury Department, who, by the way, also is supporting all these sanctions against Russia, which are hurting America and hurting, obviously, Europe.
You know, Merrick Garland, the Attorney General.
Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States. Go ahead. Yeah,
Homeland Security, Mayorkas,
they talk about being Hispanic. I've read his biographies. He's got some Hispanic heritage. Hispanic Jews is what they were. They weren't real Hispanics. They were Jews.
Yeah, yeah.
And he identifies himself as a Jew, not an Hispanic, except for the fact that his ancestors live in what was Spain, which was an Hispanic country. But Jews don't identify their heritage, as he doesn't in his book. He literally says he's truly, you know, a Jew, or that this is the heritage that he celebrates. Yet he is promoted as like an Hispanic. That's diversity, right? Hispanic, you know. But he's a Jew, actually. And then we can go forward. The head of the biggest intelligence chief of America, which is very important, because remember, it was the same intelligence chiefs like Richard Pearl and Wolfowitz that were giving us these lies. And then you had the Secretary of State, the black Stephen Fetchett guy, go to the UN and tell us how that Iran had weapons of mass destruction, but it was all lies. And even he has got to admit that it was all lies. He should have known better, right? But it was all produced by these Jews. And so you just got to keep, you know, going down. So Avril Haines is the National Security Advisor, to which the FBI and the CIA report to, and military intelligence report to, chief intelligence officer. She's a Jewish Zionist. Her mama's name is Rappaport. She's entitled to Jewish citizenship by her heritage. She hobnobs with Mossad agents, and Mossad has done terrible spying and damage against the United States. For instance, Jonathan Pollard case, the terrorist attacks like the Levon affair, when they attacked American installations in Egypt, trying to blame it on the Egyptians, and the attack on the USS Liberty, which they at first tried to blame on Egyptians too, which they didn't do. It was Jews, and they knew exactly it was an American ship. These are the people that run America. These are the people that have this kind of incredible power. Six of the seven top cabinet positions are Jews. So first off, let's go to the Russian unprovoked war thing. We've only got a couple minutes.
Yeah, we got a couple of minutes, yeah.
So the unprovoked war thing goes like this. Okay, Russia started this war as unprovoked. No, this war was started actually in 2014 against the innocent civilian population of Eastern Ukraine. The government passed this legislation that you couldn't speak the Russian language, which is the language of their ancestors for 1,000 years, including many native Ukrainians, right, and Cossacks. You couldn't speak the Russian language. You would be discriminated against in jobs, promotions, scholarships, universities, everything in the country. And they decided, and after these Jews, they didn't go along with the overthrown government under Zelensky. And so they decided that they wanted independence, and they voted independence. They didn't start any war against Kyiv. They didn't try to have a civil war and overthrow the government. They just simply said, we have the right, just like the American Declaration of Independence, we have the right to rule ourselves and have a government that we choose.
After 8 years of being terrorized and shelled by Ukrainian forces.
Well, they actually wanted to separate earlier, but they were shelled, and the shelling started in 2014. And it's continued on to this day. It still happens in Donetsk and other places. Yeah. And 14,000 Ukrainians, mostly civilians, have been terrorized and killed by these Ukrainians. It wasn't the Russians doing it. And when they massed to invade the country and ethnically cleanse the country, that's when the Russians came in. And then the next thing was...
It's a good point. They asked the Russians. They only cooperated with the Russians when the Russians agreed to stay, because they said, listen, you guys, if you don't stay, as soon as you leave, the Ukrainians are coming for for us, and they're going to kill us in front of our family. So if we don't stay, there's no point.
Well, they said they've been killing him for, we got 30 seconds left. But then, of course, you had the Nord Stream thing. They said this was an act of sabotage. And this was a vicious act. And people have to pay for this act of sabotage. And they said it was the Russians that did it. It turns out it was Americans and British that did it, right?
Wouldn't take a genius to work that out.
No, of course not. The Russians are going to bomb their own pipeline, which they've spent billions of dollars, and which gives them the chance to sell oil at cheap prices to Europe. But America wanted to force the Europeans to rely on them for their oil. And that's exactly why they did this. So this was an act of sabotage, an act of terrorism by America and by the Jews who rule America. And then we can just keep going. Then the bombing of the nuclear power plant, it doesn't stop, folks. So let's get free in our country of Great Britain and America and around the world. Please support Paul Stevenson and go to my site. My show comes on every day at 10 a.m. on the Rents Radio Network. And at davidduke.com, you can find me also at at Real David Duke on Gab. Hope to hear from you, folks. Thank you, Paul, for having me on.
Take care and God bless. And thank you for listening.
And you know, Paul, one last word to you. Thank you for advocating a world of peace and love rather than war and hate. That's really what these Zionists are doing. Thanks so much.